If you take public transit, you may wonder, are today's routes really the most effective routes for today's commuting habits? The answer is probably no, because many of today's transit systems were designed in a different era. Well, in Houston, transit officials recently approved a total overhaul of the city's metro bus network that will not raise operating costs. How did they do that? Joining us on the line is one of the plan's lead designers, Jarrett Walker, who runs a transit consulting firm. Jarrett, welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks very much.
Well, tell me about the before and after here. What exactly have you done to the transit system?
What we were doing was basically facing the reality that happens in many cities, which is that bus networks in particular tend to, if they were put in place 20, 30, 40 years ago, they reach predictable crises where they become obsolete. One of the main reasons that Houston's network had become obsolete was that it had been designed around customer requests, customer expectations, various political demands over many years, now sometimes decades in the past. There were many things in the system where nobody could particularly explain why the bus did that now. It just always had done that.
You mean the routes that they were taking?
Exactly. Where the buses go, how frequently they run, what they're doing. What tends to happen with bus networks is because it is so easy to change a bus route, bus routes are often changed for not very good reasons, and there tends to be a process by which they grow more and more complicated, more and more confusing, and more and more inefficient. And what you need to do periodically, it's very much like pruning a tree. You have to go through, figure out which pieces of this are actually working, which are actually necessary, take out the ones that aren't. And the way we dramatically improved the bus system without spending a dime was simply by running far fewer routes at much higher frequencies.
And I assume you have all the data you need to know exactly how many people are getting on and off the buses at each stop.
Yes, but that's not the whole picture. We're also looking very closely at the shape of the built environment because we are not just designing bus systems for the existing riders. Obviously, we want to keep the existing riders as much as we can, but the whole point of doing this is to make the transit system vastly more relevant to a much larger share of the population. You do that by understanding the whole shape of the city, by understanding where people are living and working now, by which I mean, is it possible in a given neighborhood for bus service to succeed? For bus service to succeed, there've got to be a certain number of people living near a stop, which means density. It's got to be possible to walk in the neighborhood. It has to be possible to cross the street. So suburban neighborhoods that have been built in ways that are hostile to pedestrians become hostile to transit, and it's much harder to support good service there.
But it must be difficult to take stops away that existed, that people count on.
Absolutely. So here's the core problem. Most public transit agencies in North America have two conflicting mandates. On the one hand, people talk about them as though they're expected to carry lots of riders, and we talk about them as though they're failing if their buses are empty. And yet they have a completely contrary mandate, which is what I call coverage, which means providing service based on people's lifeline needs, not on whether the buses will be full. What I do and what I did at the beginning of this project was to take the Houston board and the Houston community through a really difficult decision process about how do you want to balance those two goals, because mathematically they are opposite.
And what about the people in the lower income sections of the city? How do you consider the need of those people?
Well, it depends entirely on whether serving them generates high ridership or not. Where low-income people live in the inner city, where they live near major at relatively high density in places where walking is possible, it's easy to serve them. The real challenge in Houston and why this was so incredibly difficult is that Houston has a lot of suburban poverty, and some of the extremely impoverished areas around the northeast edge of the city, not too dissimilar to what you find in other Midwestern or Southern cities, had extremely poor people, but at very low density and with very difficult walking conditions. And so that was an example of a place where we wouldn't go there if we were pursuing ridership. The only reason you'd go there is to meet their lifeline needs. And so, it came down to a conversation. It's easy for transit leaders to say, we want more ridership. But what that actually means is that you have to balance between pursuing – you have to decide how much of your resource you're going to spend pursuing ridership and how much of your resource you're going to spend just taking care of people who live in difficult situations like low-density, unwalkable suburbia and who are low-income or who have other desperate needs.
Well, there is another question here, which is you say and many people are commending you for the fact that this is not going to cost Houston an extra dime beyond what was there before. On the other hand, some would say, why not spend more money on public transit, especially in an era of increasing income inequality? It allows people to live in less expensive parts of the area and get to work cheaply.
I agree completely. In fact, the neglect of bus systems in this country really ought to be much more scandalous than it is. Most of the bus systems that I've studied over the last 20 years in North America are shrinking in terms of service per capita. That is to say, they don't have the resources to grow their service as fast as their population is growing. So the amount of service per person is frequently actually shrinking. The other thing that's going on is that because most cities don't care very much about protecting buses from congestion, as people move into cities and there's more congestion, the bus service keeps slowing down.
Right.
And unfortunately, what we've tended to do in the bus industry is just put out more buses to pay more bus drivers to sit in more congestion rather than having a conversation about how protected from congestion it needs to be in order to so that we can run a reasonable service that people are going to find useful.
Well, or why not just invest in trains that don't have to stop in traffic?
Well, buses in exclusive lanes don't have to stop in traffic either. That issue has nothing to do with buses versus trains, because either a train or a bus is going to function well only if it has its own lane or track. The issue about trains is that when we're trying to just build the best possible transit system for the best number of people, the reason we go to trains is because we have places where we are so incredibly busy that we can't keep up with the demand with buses. You know, once you're running a bus every 2 minutes and they're all packed, you need a train because trains carry more people per driver efficiently. Unfortunately, in the U.S., rail has gotten bound up with a whole bunch of other emotions that and many people in the U.S. have the attitude that the difference between trains and buses is, let's be frank, the difference between important people and unimportant people. And that is an immensely destructive approach to public transit, because public transit succeeds precisely based on the diversity of people who find the same vehicle useful. And every time we say that, you know, we're building service for these people but not so much for those people, we're really at war with the fundamentals of how public transit succeeds. So one of the great things about Houston, excuse me, is that although they do have a light rail program, they understand that their city gets around on buses to an extraordinary degree, and that only buses can begin to address the scale of Houston and the scale of Houston's transportation demands. And that's frankly true of most North American cities, with rare exceptions like New York that have historic subways.
You have designed transit systems in Seattle, in Portland, in Minneapolis, and other places. As you look around the United States right now, are today's transit systems designed for today's users, or are they really decades old and in need of an update?
It really depends. Portland, Oregon, where I live, went through a Houston-like restructuring in 1982, and as a result, the city's bus system is very, very logical for the city as it has grown since then. So there are two things going on. First of all, there are just some standard kinds of different design that are appropriate when a city gets to a certain scale. At a certain scale, you have to stop running all the service downtown and you have to decentralize it because people are going to more different places. That's one of the aspects of the change that we're talking about. But the other aspect, of course, is that cities grow and change, and you have to periodically be updating in response to that. And even more important, it's not just that cities are changing, it's that our values and expectations of public transit are changing. That's really the interesting thing. You know, public transit is becoming so much more important to so many people. Just smartphones themselves are completely changing the individual calculation about whether it makes sense to use transit for any particular purpose. And it's causing – and that's, I think that's part of why we're seeing the extraordinary rise in transit demand across the country. Unfortunately, most transit agencies are not funded well enough to actually keep up with that growth with expanded service. And that's why we're seeing the challenges we have in so many places.
Jarrett Walker, president of the transit consulting firm Jarrett Walker & Associates. He was one of the lead designers of Houston's newly approved transit overhaul plan. And you can see photos of the before and after in Houston at our website, hereandnow.org. Jarrett, thank you.
Thanks so much, Jeremy. Glad to be here.